folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. And this is episode number 35 of the Handgun World Show. Thank you for listening. If you are listening for the first time, and I know I'm getting some first-time listeners, a few every week, I want to tell you that you are tuning in to a practical firearms podcast. I don't get into a lot of technical information on this show. I talk about the practical ownership, shooting, training, and every once in a while throw in a gun review if I've had a chance to go shoot it. I'm not a gunsmith. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not an ex-military guy. I'm just a private citizen who has been carrying a firearm for about 5 years for personal protection. Strong believer in the Second Amendment rights that we have here in the United States. And so that's what I talk about on this show. So thank you for tuning in. Today I am going to talk about performing reloads. And I don't mean reloading ammunition. I mean actually reloading your pistol. If you are, God forbid, in a gunfight and you are having to defend yourself. And this show is based on an email that came from a listener. I've been getting a lot of listener feedback and it's great. Thanks, folks. You know, you guys know who you are who are sending me emails and giving me ideas for this show. Thank you. See, this is your show, folks. I'm just the guy behind the microphone, all right? And I happen to be driving again today. As I told you, in my job that I do, I drive about 45,000 miles a year. I live in North Texas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm a Yankee transplanted to Texas, and so I do a lot of traveling, a lot of driving. So I fill up some of the windshield time in dictating these podcasts. And every once in a while, I forget to cover something or I don't get deep enough into a subject. And so one of the listeners sent me an email and he said, hey, you know, you did a podcast, Bob, on performing reloads. I think that was two episodes ago. I don't have actually the website in front of me because I'm driving, but I'm pretty sure it was two or three episodes ago. I combined it with laser sights. And the gentleman sent me an email and he said, you know, tactical reloads can really be a dangerous thing to do in a real-life situation. And he pointed me to two articles. One of them was written by Michael Bain. I sure like the stuff that Michael Bain says. And I'm going to share some of that article with you. I'm also going to link to this article in the show notes if you want to read the entire thing. But basically, it's called Tactical Reload, Trick or Reality. You know, you've heard me talk about IDPA competitions before. And I firmly believe in IDPA. I think that every handgun owner, if you want to be serious about defending yourself with a firearm, you should go shoot IDPA matches. Now, I want to put a disclaimer on this. IDPA, International Defensive Pistol Association, a club we have here in the United States, it's not combat pistol training. All right? It's not the end-all to being proficient with your handgun if you end up having to use it to defend yourself. There are some weaknesses to IDPA. It is a game, okay? And some of the rules and some of the techniques taught in that are meant to win a game. In other words, to shoot accurately in the shortest period of time and achieve the best score, okay? How does that differ from real-life defense if some of you are new to handguns? Let me tell you something, folks. The only score you need to make in real-life self-defense, the only score you need to make is to stop the bad guy. And in my humble opinion, I don't care how you accomplish stopping that bad guy. But one of the things that you have to be real careful of is making sure that you don't do something that could give a window of opening to your attacker to possibly shoot back at you if he's armed, or come at you with the knife he might have, or whatever instrument that he's using to attack you with. And sometimes, tactical reload, the way that the tactical reload is taught for IDPA competition and performed, Michael Bain makes a pretty good case that it could get you killed. So again, I think IDPA is very, very good for teaching the basics. I've mentioned before, and I still think it's good for drawing your pistol from your holster. Okay, learning to properly draw your pistol, you know, how to get it out of there quickly and how to be safe about it. It's also good action shooting. You learn to shoot on the move. You learn to shoot at moving targets. You learn to make sure you're constantly acquiring a good sight picture, if you can get one. You know, there's some stages in IDPA where you basically just pull your gun out of the holster, point and shoot. Also called point shooting. Folks, there's many times I've never even looked at my sights when I'm shooting in an IDPA match. You know, sometimes a target is 3 yards away. And when you get good enough, when you practice enough, you're able to pull that pistol out of your holster and you can put shots where they need to be. You can put them within the zero ring at 3 yards without even getting a sight picture. I mean, there are times, you know, the more you practice and the better you get at it, you should be able to do that, especially from a short distance like 3 yards, 9 or 10 feet, which, by the way, is the same distance as a lot of self-defense handgun encounters. One of the IDPA matches I shot recently, we had to draw the pistol from our holster and fire 2 shots from retention. And that basically means pull your pistol out of the holster, keep your elbow in tight to your body, and basically you're pointing the gun at the target. You're not aiming the gun, you're pointing the gun. So again, I'm going to take a class on point shooting coming up soon, and I can't wait. I'm really excited to learn to master point shooting. And you can bet that once I take that pistol course, that point shooting course, I am going to be doing probably a couple of podcasts on what I learned. And I might even do some videos. As a matter of fact, I'm actually putting together some videos, folks, little by little. I'm kind of putting together the material, and then I'll shoot the video, and I'll film it, and I'll set up a YouTube channel, and you can go to the YouTube channel and check out some of the videos that I'm going to produce. That's coming in about 30 days or so. But let's dive into this article that Michael Bain wrote on tactical reloads, trick or reality. He describes that he was at an IDPA match, and he says he heard somebody say, "At least I'll be ready if I ever have to defend myself with my gun." And it was a couple of new people talking. And, you know, Michael Bain kind of puts that down a little bit because he does talk about these tactical reloads and how they could get you killed. So let's dive into it here. Let me share some of this information with you. Now, let me also mention before I get into it that Michael Bain is a pretty good expert in the field of high-stress decision-making with a gun. He's definitely earned the reputation for that, and you'll be able to read about some of that if you don't quite know who he is when you read this article. But the reality versus gaming debate has been going on for a long time, and he addresses this. And Michael Bain says that the tactical reload is a solution to a non-existent problem. And I agree with him on that. And you know what the tactical reload is, basically, if I can put this in simple terms for you. Once you decide to reload your pistol, you eject the magazine into your weak hand and you hold on to that old magazine with your third and fourth fingers, and then you grab a fresh magazine with the other part of your hand, and you slam that home, I call it slamming it home, into your pistol. You insert a fresh magazine into the grip and slam it home to seat it properly. One of the biggest problems with reloading a pistol is if you don't seat your magazine properly. What that means, what seating it means, is that if you notice, like for example, if you shoot a Glock, or really any pistol, slowly insert your magazine. Unloaded, of course. Practice this at home. Slowly insert your magazine till you hear that positive click. All right? You'll hear a positive click that'll tell you that the magazine has now seated itself firmly into place. Now the gun's ready to fire again. If you don't do that, the magazine's probably either going to fall out and hit the ground again, and you're going to have just the one round you have left in the chamber, if you do have a round left in the chamber, or you're going to have a useless gun. So you got it. That's one of the big mistakes, and I've made that mistake, folks. Man, I tell you what, I have made that mistake. I've made it in training class, and I've made it in matches, not seating it properly. And I've seen very experienced shooters make that mistake. We get nervous. We start fumbling around, okay? And again, you know, remember, our fine motor skills go out the window when we get nervous. So Michael Bain calls it a solution to a non-existent problem. And what he says is, the practical shooting sports started out practical, but they became less practical once people started getting into the game of it. And Michael Bain describes the tactical reload as basically topping off your gun during a lull in the fight and retaining whatever unfired ammunition that remains in your magazine in case you might need it later. And it's one of the three recognized reloads by the IDPA organization. The other one is a slide lock reload, which means you have what we call shot your pistol dry. That means you've fired all the rounds in the magazine. And your pistol, if it's a semi-automatic, should be in slide lock. In other words, a slide lock is locked back. At that point, you quickly pull another magazine off your belt, slam it home into the pistol, and I don't like to use my thumb to release the slide. I like to do the slingshot method, which is grab a hold of the back of the slide, pull it back quickly as if I'm pulling back a slingshot, and let it fly forward. I prefer that because that is a much easier thing to do under stress than it is to find that slide release lever. I've also gotten real nervous during matches and training before, and I'm fumbling around with the slide release lever, and if I cost myself a half a second, that could be an extra half a second where the bad guy can shoot me. And if I don't properly get the slide, or, you know, let's say, for example, here's another reason I don't like using the slide release lever with my thumb. The reason I don't like releasing that is because if you don't do it properly, your pistol may not completely go into battery. In other words, the slide may not go completely forward, and that causes a lot of problems as well. So grab a hold of the back of that slide on Glocks and most 1911s, all 1911s as far as I know. They've got serrations on the back of the slide so you can get a good firm grip on it to use that slingshot method. So if you're at a slide lock reload, you slam that magazine home and you slingshot that slide back and let it go forward. The other IDPA recognized reload is what's called a reload with retention. In other words, basically you eject the old magazine, you stick it in your pocket, usually you're wearing a vest. You stick it in the vest pocket, you grab a fresh magazine, slam it home into the pistol, and continue on with shooting. Remember, when you do the reload with retention and you do the tactical reload, you've already got a round in the chamber of your pistol. So as soon as there's no slide to release, as soon as you put the fresh magazine in, you can resume shooting. Now, Michael Bain says what's missing is the speed reload. And see, I'm a big fan of the speed reload. There's another competition called IPSC, IPSC. International Practical Shooting Confederation. And they allow you to do speed reloads. Speed reloads is basically drop the empty mag, grab a loaded mag, stuff the new mag into the gun, and keep on shooting. And see, I think this is more reality, and I agree with Michael Bain on this. You know, in a real fight, in a real self-defense situation, if you have to reload, folks, let's hope it doesn't get to that point, okay? That's why I like high-capacity pistols. That's why I like my Glock 19 so much, because it's 16 rounds of 9mm. I sure hope the conflict is over in 16 rounds. See, an IDPA has another stupid rule, which is called, in the stock service pistol division, you can only put 10 rounds in your gun, plus one in the chamber, to start that stage. 11 rounds. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, I can only put 11 rounds in this gun, but it'll hold 16. This is silly. They did that to level the playing field. They did that because when we had a high-capacity magazine ban, the most you could have legally was 10 rounds in your gun. So they established that rule during that time. We don't have that ban anymore. I think that they should get rid of that rule. But, you know, because in IDPA competition, you're competing against people who are shooting a similar gun as you anyway. They're in a similar division as you anyway. So I think it's stupid. I think we should practice with how we are going to carry our guns. Let me say that again. We should practice with how we're going to carry their gun. And who carries their gun without their magazines loaded to capacity? You should. If you've got a gun that'll hold 16 rounds, by golly, put 16 rounds in it. There is an argument for downloading it by one round, to keep the spring tension in good shape so that your spring doesn't get weak with having a fully loaded magazine. There's an argument to that. I stuff the gun full all the rounds I can get into it. So I hope I never get to the reload. But if I am going to reload, I'm going to do a speed reload. Speed reload means I'm going to reload the damn thing as fast as I possibly can. Okay? I am going to quickly get that old magazine out of there, and I'm going to get a fresh magazine with a new 15 rounds of 9mm Corban DPX into that Glock 19 as fast as I can, and I am going to resume shooting. You can't do that in IDPA competition. Now, it's also assumed you're going to be doing the reload behind cover. In other words, if you are in a fight, you're going to be able to find cover somewhere and do your reload. Ideally, sure. I guess that'd be nice if you could find cover. Let's talk about reality. I like to keep this show rooted in reality. Folks, there's a very good chance you're not going to be able to find cover. If bullets are flying, first of all, you're going to want to get the heck out of there. I mean, your main goal is going to be probably to return fire and just get the heck out of that situation. You don't want to be around there. You don't want to be there a split second longer than you really have to be. So chances are you may not be able to find cover. So this reloading behind cover stuff, that's also something that bothers me. Again, I'm a big proponent of IDPA and in competitions like that for some certain techniques. But learn to perfect your speed reloads. In other words, learn how to reload that gun as fast as you possibly can and continue firing as fast as you can. And don't let anything slow you down. So the main point of Michael Bain's article is that the tactical reloads really should not be taught. I would agree with him on that. I think it can get you killed. It can cost way too much time. It requires fine motor skills. You're probably not going to be able to perform. It could cost you a second or two, and that could cost you your life, and that's just simply no good. So it's part of the game, and if you're going to play the game of IDPA, I tell you what. Here's my thought, and here's why I go shoot IDPA matches. I don't go there to win. I'm probably not going to win. In fact, I've never won a match. I've done pretty well. I've placed in the top third out of about 30 shooters several times. I've been in the top 10. But I'm not really going there to get the best score. I'm going there to do better than I did the last time. I'm going there to improve my accuracy and improve my speed. That's what I'm going there for. I'm going there to practice over and over and over the basic gun handling and shooting and moving while shooting. See, that's what I like. Because in a real fight, folks, I'm going to be moving. I like to practice that at IDPA and IPSC competitions. I like shooting at targets that are moving. Boy, I tell you, it's a whole different ballgame when you try to shoot a target that's moving. In my club, we have what's called the Texas Star, and I think there's a lot of other IDPA clubs that have that. It's five steel plates on a wheel, and it revolves around. And basically, it's still at first, and as soon as you drop the first steel plate, that thing starts to spin. If you shoot it right, it won't spin as fast as if you shoot it wrong. If you shoot it in the wrong order, it's going to be spinning, and you're going to have a heck of a hard time knocking that 8-inch steel plate off of the Texas Star while it's spinning, or while the whole wheel is spinning around. But see, that's good practice to shoot at targets like that. So that's why I go to IDPA. I go there to compete against myself, not to win the match. If you want to win the match, you're probably going to have to learn to get good with tactical reloads and reloads with retention. I see nothing wrong with dropping a magazine with ammunition if it means that you can get a fresh magazine in there, fully loaded, and end the fight. That's the key, ending the fight. Okay? Now, since I'm also on the subject of performing reloads, somebody actually emailed me and asked me what did I think about extended magazine release buttons. Putting an extended magazine release button, making it easier for you to use your strong hand thumb to eject the magazine. How do I feel about that? Well, certainly, my opinion is it gives you a better edge in competition. Now, what I don't like about most extended magazine release buttons is sometimes you can press that too easily. Sometimes you can accidentally eject a magazine when you don't want to. As I mentioned, I've seen this done. I've seen people, while they're drawing their pistol, accidentally hit that extended, extra-wide magazine release button, and the magazine comes flying out of the gun before they've even had a chance to start shooting. That's not good, because then basically you're left with the one round that's in your gun. You have a single-shot gun at that point. So I would caution you against putting too large of an extended magazine release button. On my Glocks, I leave the mag release buttons exactly the way they are from the factory. I don't put extended ones on there. Because I don't want... And you know what? I just practice. I have fairly decent sized hands, and I got a pretty long thumb. So I don't have any problem reaching that. Now, if you're the kind of person that has a problem reaching the magazine release button on your pistol, just practice. That's all I can say. I would say, you know, again, I throw my opinions on this show from time to time, and this is one of those cases where I'm doing that. Leave the magazine release button the way it is. Here's another thing you have to understand. Is that, let's say, for example, your gun is on your nightstand, or let's say it's in your safe on top of your nightstand, like I've got at my house. I've got one of those push-button safes, and it sits on top of my nightstand. Okay? Well, when I lay that gun down in the safe, it's resting on top of the magazine release button. Here's what can happen. When I stick my hand in there to get my gun, if I press down on the gun and I have an extended magazine release button on my Glock, that can also eject the magazine when I don't want it to. And that's not good either. With the standard factory magazine release button, that won't happen. Now with my Glock 34, that was set up for competition. Okay? That's a competition only gun. If I had to use it in self-defense, obviously, I would love being able to use my Glock 34. I mean, 17 rounds in the magazine, plus one in the chamber, extra long sight radius, extra long barrel, nice sights on that thing. I mean, man, what a blaster that thing is. That'd be fun. But it's not reality. I don't carry it. That's pretty much my dedicated competition gun. I carry my Glock 19, I carry my Glock 26, I carry my Car Arms PM9, I carry my Car Arms P380. So on my carry guns, I leave the magazine release buttons the way they are. I don't want them to eject the magazine, and I don't want to accidentally do it at the worst possible time. So that's my thought on that. Again, a lot of talk here about reloading, but let's just hope you don't even get to that point. Really. I mean, learn to get good and end the fights before you have to put in a fresh magazine. Most of the time, folks, I don't even carry an extra magazine. I keep an extra magazine in my vehicle, but I typically don't carry one on my belt or carry it in my pocket. Maybe that's a chance I'm taking. And if that's a chance I'm taking, well, then so be it. But I think I can end the fight in 16 rounds. Okay, so getting back to Michael Bain's article a little bit, he points out the fact that the argument for the tactical reload is basically that you don't want to dump perfectly good rounds on the ground because you might need them later. And so therefore the theory is take a little bit longer to reload and capture a partially spent magazine in your hand as you simultaneously use that same hand to grab the fresh magazine and slam it home into your weapon. But I like what Michael Bain says. He says, in his opinion, the fight's either over or it's not. There's no such thing as a lull in the action to perform that tactical reload. If it's over, if the fight's over, then your weapon should be holstered, which is a very good point. And if it's not, if it's not over and your weapon's not holstered, then you need to be prepared to fight, to continue fighting instantly. And basically he says that if your gun needs to be reloaded, then getting back into the fighting condition is the most critical issue facing you for the next 1 to 2 seconds maximum. So just simply speed reloading, as I mentioned before, that's the thing to master. So to the listener who sent me this email and this article, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And again, that's why I say this is your show. And I'm a big fan of the speed reloads. Okay, and the final point comes from this article, and actually another article called Police One, and I'll link to that too. And the final point that I want to make is basically the author of the article is not aware of a single civilian gunfight that's been lost because of 1 or 2 rounds of ammo. Okay? And the last 5 minutes of this show, I want to talk about another subject. So let's shift gears. I hope you got some information there on performing reloads. I want to use these last 5 minutes to talk about a different subject and set up the next podcast. I want to talk about something I haven't covered much, and that is ammunition. I really haven't spent a whole lot of time talking about ammunition and the different calibers and so forth and what I like and what I have experience with. I will say this. The more I shoot the Corban DPX with the solid copper bullets, and the more I read about them and the more research I do about them, and the more I realize about their penetration ability and their expansion, the more I like that round. I don't represent Corban. I don't work for any ammunition manufacturer. As I mentioned, I'm just a private citizen, and I talk about my practical experiences on this show. But there's two things you have to take into consideration when you're thinking about ammunition. I don't care what caliber, whether it's 9mm, 40, 45, 38, 357 Magnum. It doesn't matter. No matter what caliber it is, you have to take into consideration 2 points. Number one is penetration, and number two is expansion. And obviously, you want the best of both. You want good penetration, all right? You've got to have a good 10 to 12 inches of penetration. 12 inches is preferred. And you can read all kinds of ballistics tests. Folks, I'm telling you what, you can find absolutely a plethora of information on ballistics tests of ammunition. It'll bore you. I mean, I've put myself to sleep reading some of this stuff. But what you want to pay attention to is how much penetration, when they shoot at the ballistic gelatin to test the round, how much penetration do you get? I think that's vitally important. Now, I hate to talk about gruesome things on this show, okay? But this is the Handgun World Show, and we do talk about self-defense, and we do talk about the unfortunate situation where you might have to pull your gun. It's something we don't want to do, folks. I keep saying it over and over again, but we have to talk about this if we're going to have an intelligent discussion about defending ourselves, right? You want the round to penetrate. First and foremost, in my opinion, that is key. And, you know, let me talk about 380 caliber for a minute. I've talked to people that carry full metal jacket ammunition in their 380. Now, I know this is controversial. I know some people are going to say, oh, that's not good, Bob. You could have over-penetration, and it could go through your attacker, and it could hit somebody, an innocent person. Yeah, that could happen. But a 380 round is pretty weak anyway. I wouldn't want to get shot with one. Don't get me the wrong way. But they're weaker than 9 and 40 and 45. And so some people are of the school of thought, carry full metal jacket for a 380 pistol because it will penetrate better. In Corban DPX, though, I beg to differ. Boy, they've done such a good job with that round. The all-copper bullet gives it very, very good penetration. Penetration also is determined a lot by the speed of your round. And some people have claimed that 45s don't penetrate as much as, say, a 9mm and a 40 caliber. That's why the 40 caliber has become so popular. Because supposedly the 40 caliber blends the two benefits of 9mm and 45 together. You get high speed, high velocity, like you do from a 9mm bullet, but you've got a large enough caliber that's got some oomph. It's got some stopping power. It's got some weight to it, and so it has the tendency to stop. And the 40 caliber is an excellent penetrating round. I feel very confident with my 9 because I'm so accurate with it, and I'm so well practiced with the 9mm. You know, above all, it doesn't matter what kind of ammunition you have, if you can't put your shots where they're supposed to be, whatever fancy schmancy ammunition you have is not going to do you any good if you don't hit your target. So again, look for the penetration. And then, of course, the expansion. What I like about the DPX round is if you look at it, just next time you go to an ammunition store that sells Corban DPX, ask them to open up the box and let you take a look at one of the rounds. It's got a very deep cavity. And if you look at that bullet, you'll be able to see how it can expand. I mean, you can just looking at the construction of the bullet, you'll look at that and you'll go, yeah, boy, that's going to expand. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Hey, Bob, a 9mm might expand, but a 45 never shrinks. Yeah, I know, folks. I've heard that. And to all you 45 fans out there, yes, your 45s are not going to shrink. And folks, let me tell you what. The 45 ACP is a magnificent round. So let me speak to that for a minute. The 45 ACP round did its job in World War II very well. The 45 ACP round has stopped a lot of people. It is definitely a proven man-stopper. So is the 40 caliber. So is 9mm with good ammunition. And I would much prefer to have 16 rounds of 9mm versus, say, 8 rounds of 45. That's just my personal preference. So, again, am I putting down 1911s that have 8 rounds of 45? No, because if you can master a 1911, you can be very, very accurate with those guns. So you can put those 45 rounds where they need to be, and therefore you're going to be effective. But it's just my personal preference. But you want to look, in my opinion, you want to look at the penetration. Make sure you're getting a good 12 inches of penetration. That bullet has got to reach the vital organs of your attacker. If it doesn't reach the vital organs of your attacker, it's far less likely to stop him. And again, we're talking about stopping them from committing the act that they're committing. That's what we're talking about. And make sure that the bullet has good, reliable expansion. Most good quality ammunition today that's on the market is pretty good. Ammo manufacturers have become very, very good. They're a lot better than they were 15 or 20 years ago. We've come a long way in making ammunition. And for those of you who do reload your ammunition, just pay attention to the penetration and the expansion. Now, I'm gonna go ahead and say I don't advocate that you carry full metal jacket ammunition in any of your pistols. Practicing with it is great. It's excellent practice ammo because it's cheap to buy. And all you're doing is punching holes in paper or shooting steel targets, usually, when you're practicing and when you're training. Carry good quality hollow points that penetrate and expand. And if your gun does not shoot hollow points reliably, do what you need to do to that gun to make it shoot hollow points reliably, or get a different gun that will shoot them reliably. You know, there is something to be said about over-penetration. What we don't want is we don't want innocent bystanders getting shot from a bullet that has over-penetrated. Now, I've covered this before in a podcast once, and I'll close with this. I do, however, think that the over-penetration argument is overblown. Let me say that again. I think the over-penetration problem is way overblown. Because I'm willing to bet you listening to this podcast right now, I'm willing to bet you something. In fact, I'll bet you a box of ammo that people miss their target more than they hit it in a defensive situation. All right? When you get nervous and your adrenaline is going, you're going to miss more than you're going to hit. Sorry, I don't care how good you think you are. That's the reality. So here's my question. What happens to all those rounds that miss their target? Aren't they just as bad as the rounds that over-penetrate? See, people bring up the argument, well, what happens if it goes through the bad guy and comes out of the bad guy and hits an innocent person? Hey, let me tell you something. The shots that you miss with are also going to hit an innocent person. They have just as much chance of hitting an innocent person as the rounds that actually hit your bad guy do. You see what I'm saying? More missing takes place than hitting. So there's a lot of stuff made about this over-penetration stuff. I'm not going to advocate that you carry a full metal jacket just because you don't want to fall into that problem of over-penetrating. But don't get too hung up on that. Carry a round that's going to be effective, and I'm going to do some more on ammunition. I'm doing a little bit more research on different types of ammo and different calibers, and I'll be covering that shortly as well in an upcoming podcast. But let me just do a quick recap before I sign off, and that is, as far as tactical reloads, from a real life standpoint, I don't think it's really all that realistic, and the only time you need to master a tactical reload is if you want to win the game. Otherwise, get good with your speed reloads. And pay attention to expansion and penetration. And check out Corban DPX. Federal Hydro Shock is good ammo too. Spear Gold Dot. That's an excellent brand. A matter of fact, I think Spear, if I'm not mistaken, Spear Gold Dots are probably the most common law enforcement ammunition that is used today. I could be wrong about that. If some of you have some other information on that, go ahead, feel free to send me an email and set me straight. So, thanks for listening to episode number 35 of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main, and why do I carry a gun? It's obvious by now, because I can't carry a gun. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time.